This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. With the dying off of newspapers, serious arts journalism in particular is at a serious inflection point. Today we'll look into how critics and cultural reporters are coping. But first, this song is from a play called Ruin, which just won the Pulitzer Prize. And what sounds lighthearted and fun is actually part of its disguise. The song's a pointed denial of the horrors that the characters are really facing. You come here to forget. You said that there were only good days. And dance like it's ending. The ending. Ruin is set in a bar and brothel in the Democratic Republic of Congo, in the middle of civil war. Soldiers from both sides are killing each other as well as the civilians in their paths, and engaging in rape and sexual slavery. Remarkably, for a situation so dark, the playwright Lynn Nottage has managed to tell the story with charm and humor.
I wanted to look at the human side. I was really interested in what happens to the human spirit and how does love continue to flourish in the face of such ugliness and brutality.
Do you think that because you begin with a 51% glass half full hopefulness about life?
I am absolutely a glass half full person. Absolutely.
Well, that explains a lot about
it. It does. I'm an optimist.
Well, now, after you got your MFA in playwriting from Yale, you, instead of devoting yourself 100% 24/7 to writing plays, you went to work for Amnesty International.
Yeah, that's true. When I graduated, I felt like I needed a much more expansive experience. I had spent the time from when I was in first grade through graduate school in an academic setting, and I felt like I really need to interface with the world. I need to understand in order to write.
And you could have gone to work for, an insurance office. Why did you choose? What did you do for Amnesty?
I could have been an actuary. But I was the national press officer.
Did you find it difficult to retell and tell the stories of people suffering in various ways?
That's a really interesting question. I feel that you develop callous when you're in a job like that. And because I was dealing with human rights abuses on such a daily basis, and I was looking at images because a lot of my job was sort of providing images to the media, that you turn part of yourself off, which is a horrible thing to say, but you have to in order to survive, because if you engage with every single image, you would not be able to get through the day.
Now, if somebody had told me before I'd seen the play, okay, this playwright used to be the head of press for Amnesty International and she's written a play about the Congo, I'd sort of go, it's going to be this kind of schematic agitprop thing. And it's not that at all. Did you set out thinking I have to not make this attract?
Well, it was really important for me to have the audience engage with the piece. And I know the kind of theater that I enjoy and like, and I hate being preached to. I literally, when I sit in a theater and I feel like, oh, I'm going to be lectured to, and here's your medicine and you're going to swallow it, I turn off.
That's what newspapers and magazines newspapers and books
and
magazine are for.
Yes, exactly. And I thought that it's really important for people to spend time with my characters, and how do I get them to spend time with my characters for 2.5 hours?
Where did you find these characters? Tell me about your expedition to do the research work.
Well, I traveled to Uganda with the director in 2004, and we went to Uganda because there were so many Congolese refugee women who were pouring over the border, and we actually went in search of them. And I was sort of surprised by the number of women who wanted to share their stories. And one by one, they'd recount their narratives to us.
Tell me about some of the women you met there who were most amazing to you as the bases for your character.
Well, it's interesting. I met a number of women. One woman who really stands out is this chief's daughter, who was the very first story that we heard. And her story just literally, it entered my heart and never left. And she describes being in her home, being dragged out by a group of soldiers, taken to prison, being raped by four men, and then using a watch on her wrist to bribe her way out. And once getting out, just running.
That woman became the inspiration for several characters in the play, including your character Salima. And here Salima describes what was going on in the moments before she became a victim.
The sun was about to crest, but I had to put in another hour before it got too hot. It was such a clear and open sky. Oh, this splendid bird, a peacock, had come into the garden to taunt me and was showing off its feathers. I stooped down and called to the bird, "Hst, hst," and I felt a shadow cut across my back. And when I stood, four men were there over me, smiling wicked schoolboy smiles. "Yes," I said. And the tall soldier slammed the butt of his gun into my cheek. Just like that. It was so quick, I didn't even know I'd fallen to the ground. Where did they come from? How could I not have heard them?
One of the things that I encountered when I was interviewing women is a lot of them spoke of not anticipating the moment, is that suddenly the men were upon them, and they were either in a field or they were in their homes, and someone kicked in the door, and then they were there, so that their daily life was suddenly interrupted. There's an ebb and flow to the war, and so that people are going about their daily lives, and all of a sudden, soldiers will tumble into the town, and chaos will break out, and then they'll retreat, and then the people will be forced to sort of pick back up the pieces of their life and go about their business, not knowing when hell will descend again.
That character, Salima, goes on to describe horrifically how the soldiers murder her baby and kidnap her and rape her for months. And I want to play a bit more of that monologue in which she talks about how after her months in captivity, she returns home.
I walked into the family compound expecting wide open arms, an embrace. 5 months suffering. I suffered every single second of it. And my family gave me the back of their heads. And he, the man I loved since I was 14, chased me away with a green switch. He beat my ankles raw. And I dishonored him. I dishonored him. Where was he? Buying a pot? He was too proud to bear my shame, but not proud enough to protect me from it.
That is Quincy Tyler Burstein as Salima, a girl working as a prostitute at the bar brothel that is the center of Ruined. Given how horribly traumatic these experiences were for these women, made even worse by the fact that they couldn't talk about the experiences with their loved ones. Why do you think they talked to you?
Oh, well, I think that there was a sense of appreciation that someone was willing to sort of sit down and be patient and listen to their story from beginning to end, because they felt like the aid workers were not interested in their personal narratives. You know, they wanted sort of the quick highlights. You know, what happened? This happened. Okay, here's your grain. Move on. Their families, in many cases, had completely and absolutely rejected them and did not want to hear their stories. And even a lot of the women said that their friends and families weren't necessarily sympathetic.
Because they just wanted it to be
They just wanted to be, yeah. You know, it's like it's a wound. They didn't want to see sort of the festering wound. You know, it's just cover it up, bandage it. We don't want to know that it's there.
Having spent so much time not only being there and talking to these women and thinking about it and as you wrote the play, did you come to any better understanding than you had when you began of how this just grotesque, pathological failure of a society happens and makes people behave this way toward one another?
I have no better understanding, because I still cannot comprehend it. In the Congo, I do, and I can sort of offer you some sort of academic explanation, which I still don't think explains how and why it happens.
The post-colonial history.
Yeah, post-colonial history. I mean, I can give you all of that. And we know that the history of the Congo is particularly brutal, and the form of colonialism was particularly horrific. And I think that when you have generations and generations upon people who've been exploited, that there has to be some sort of corrosion in the fabric of the society, or corrosion of the society.
But we can't. One is not an apologist for the horror, and certainly in this play, you are not an apologist.
I don't think that it's simple enough to blame colonialism for the failings in the Congo. I think that the Congolese government and the men and even the women in the Congo have to take some sort of responsibility for what's going on.
You must have thought about trying to produce Ruined in Africa.
Yeah.
Is that going to happen?
I believe in my heart it will happen. I strongly feel that we will get there. Not only will we get there, I feel that we will get to the Congo with this play.
Lynn Nottage, thanks very much.
Oh, thank you.
Ruined is playing at the Manhattan Theater Club through June. And we have another song from the show that you can listen to at studio360.org.
And dance like it's the ending. The ending of the war. The ending of the war.
Coming up, a film critic tries to survive.
The jobs are disappearing.
Can his readers save him? Find out ahead in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC. Stay with us.